Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Hello. Good morning. I'm back. It's me, Jesse, here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, campus community radio from Simon Fraser University. And the show is called Speak Up, and I am broadcasting from the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Kwikwetlem, Tsleil-Waututh, Squamish, Catesy, Stolo, and other Coast Salish peoples. Excuse me. And very grateful to be on this land that has been occupied by people since time immemorial, committed to doing whatever I can as an individual and whatever we as CJSF can as an organization to support the original inhabitants of these lands. Today on the show, I have the third consecutive installment of our new recurring segment with World Media in English. Ramtin joined me to have a conversation about a couple things going on in the world that you might not have heard about if you're exclusively within the Anglosphere, and if you're just generally not as plugged into world events and world news to the extent that you go beyond just what the mainstream media tells you. So, I mean, if you're here, you probably know a little bit of that, particularly if you stick around into the 11 o'clock hour to listen to Democracy Now!, which happens every weekday here, Monday to Friday at 11, right after this show, Speak Up. So we'll get to that. We'll get to what I found in the archives down at 312 Main, because I was down there yesterday recording an episode of Sister C's program, Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon, which airs tomorrow, Friday, from 10 to 11 a.m. in this slot. Charlotte spoke with a number of vendors and authors from Megaphone Magazine. So you can tune in tomorrow from 10 to 11 to hear that. Anyway, I got CDs from the archive to play, a couple things. I've got some cool new music from the station playlist to play for you. And as always, a bunch of talking and some local music. So let's start with that last thing. I guess we started with a bunch of talking. Only 3 minutes so far. This is an artist who I am almost certain I have played on this show. I know I have played Francis Arevalo on the radio before. Did an episode of the Vancouver Mixtape, my Sunday evening show, featuring Francis in support of his new album, Heat Check, which is out now. And this track, Do You, is one of the lead singles from that album, Heat Check. The whole album is amazing. This track features the inimitable Desiree Dawson and Francis going back and forth. It's a really great collaboration and just a great tune in general. So we're going to start with that, Do You, by Francis Arevalo featuring Desiree Dawson.
Cooking with magic, they talking about practice and don't know the half. This is our living room, home court advantage. You're walking your path and finding your balance, trusting your map, challenging rambles, questioning answers straight from the pack. Family, your anchors, because if life is an art, then what are we crafting? What does it mean to be happy? What is a dream without action? You're flipping the script and you're asking, can you really live without acting? Because you cannot spit without dancing. Your life is your canvas, channel your passions, change all the channels, channel the planets, damn it, be your own living example. Keep bumping your drafts and try
to keep channeling Zach. Put wings in your back and things in your bag and sing them some magic. Understand where you're standing, make it a standard, raising the standard, give them a sample. This is resistance, laugh at the system, laugh at the system. Make your sandbox, just never build your castle on sandlots. Can't kill kingdoms just by saying lots. Life full of chapters, we are the authors. We got water and air, they take it in often. Let us pick up on our calling, all of us really have something to offer.
When there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers. When there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers. When there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers. When there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers. When we need rain. Do you?
Do you?
What else is there to do?
Do you?
What else is there to do?
Do you? We like rhymes reaching and teaching. We like reason when it's rhyming. The future is written on the eyelids, but we're wondering where the sign is. You are the love of your life when you need guidance. Look inside it. Come with compassion, mission of passion, companions to ride with. Community striving to guide you, a compass for deciding, something to remind us. When the fight gets tiring and life starts dying, we're still here, we're still smiling. We threw a paradise or whatever paradise is. Like if paradise ain't a paradigm, fine, there until I find mine. Paradigms in my state of mind. I hope that you know this, all my homies, I hope that you know this. You shine and you got your soul still. Shine, homie, you're on your solstice. Paradise could be wherever you thrive. Oasis could be like summer inside. Find it, wish your rhythm and time and everything.
When there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers. When there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers. When there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers. When there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers. When we need rain,
do you?
Do You by Francis Arevalo featuring Desiree Dawson here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. Thanks for tuning in. And now to our recurring segment. World Media in English is a people's project to bring media in world languages to the global community through English translations and interpretations. Media coverage of issues of vital importance to communities from around the world are translated in an effort to include interpretation of social, political, and cultural context as seen from the perspectives of speakers of the original languages. I spoke yesterday with Ramtin, who is the lead volunteer at World Media in English, and here is that conversation. Hi, Ramtin.
Hi, Jesse, and hello to our listeners. For my selected news items of the week, today I'm first going to talk about a country in Africa, which has been in the headlines for very sad and tragic reasons. And my reason for this choice is that there is one important aspect of the situation in this country, which at least I, as someone who has been listening to the news, hadn't heard about before. This country is Sudan, geographically in Northeast Africa, with about 50 million people population. As people may have heard, this country suddenly became a war zone last month, and not because of a foreign power that had attacked, but because there are two generals in command of two separate armies there who both want to be the boss. And we have another heartbreaking situation with millions of people caught in between the crossfire and violence, resulting in millions uprooted and homeless and thousands brutally injured or killed. You would think this is an internal problem and the responsibilities go to the people of this country who, for whatever reasons, have failed to develop a democratic or at least a functioning political system for their country. But I heard someone with very high credentials in international affairs that a lot of the problem is geopolitical. His name is Volker Türk, and he is United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights. He was speaking in a conference in Europe on July 14th. In response to the question, what's happening in Sudan right now, he said he had met both of the generals and could only describe their actions as irresponsible. But he added that a lot of the reasons behind the situations were geopolitical too. And when asked to elaborate, he said, look, we have the US versus China, West versus Russia, West versus Global South. So it's chaotic. He went on to say that, for example, in the UN Human Rights Council, some countries had actually refused to even discuss Sudan. And the rest of his conversation was centered on two points. First, that the Sudanese civil society as forces for democracy have been excluded, not only by the warring generals who needed to carry out a coup against them, but also by the international state actors. And second, that the mainstream international media don't report situations like this as they should, and keep to the same patterns of selectiveness and exclusion. And for source, I should mention that this conversation was reported on July 17th by Democracy Now! And people can find it both in audiovisual and transcript form on Democracy Now!'s website. Now, my extensive knowledge about Sudan is about what I just said, and I don't want to attempt to make further analysis about the situation there. But I assume there must be at least some truth to what this high-level UN official says about culpability of international state actors and of media. But then, this means that as citizens of the West, or citizens of China, or Russia, or the Global South for that matter, and that's just about all of us, we bear some responsibility for the violence and suffering that is being inflicted on these people. It also means that there are things we can do. Firstly, to inform ourselves better, and secondly, to help strengthen civil society everywhere, including in this country, so we can get people better than irresponsible warriors like these to run our countries for us. And we shouldn't forget either that there is a new superpower in the world now, and that's public opinion. And this is actually a quote I'm making from a French foreign minister who, in response to demands that his country join a military attack on Iraq back 20 years ago, wanted to give a good excuse for not doing so. In other words, he was saying that public opinion was stronger than the US as a superpower. And of course, for public opinion to be informed and expressed, good journalism and media need to play a big role. With development of social media, there is now much more from and about civil society that you can see for free. And the media I quoted from, Democracy Now!, is one of the oldest and richest ones. And I am sure, not only in my opinion, but in a lot of people's opinion, you should listen to it. Not just when you are in university and your campus radio wants to offer you something progressive, but always. World media in English is a kind of civil society media too, and although it's nowhere near Democracy Now! In its development, it's an attempt to take the existing journalism a step further, rather than looking at events and issues from the outside to try to make how they are felt on the inside visible to people outside. And regarding the important situation in Sudan, for example, if there are people from this country who can help, we would love to hear from them. So this was my first news item of the week to talk about, a subject which also makes strong connections with bigger questions of democracy and its global interconnectedness, and the importance of citizen participation and good journalism. My second and last item that I want to talk about today is from my native country, Iran. The news was that another fuel carrier had his car rolled over and caught on fire. and he was burnt alive inside his car. And that in the past year, 168 fuel carriers have died in similar accidents or shot dead by government armed forces in the area bordering with Pakistan. Now, unless you have heard about these people before, which I doubt you have, given almost no international reporting about them, you must be asking, who are these fuel carriers and why should they die under these kinds of circumstances? Well, it's more accurate to call them fuel smugglers. They number probably in the thousands, young to middle-aged men in southeast Iran, a land historically called Balochistan, who are usually of the Baluchi ethnicity, who can find no other way to support themselves and their families but to buy cheaper gasoline in Iran and load it in their cars and illegally drive it across the border to Pakistan to sell their cargo there for a profit. As you can see, this is a very dangerous business that in fact has been practiced by these people for years now. The smugglers are usually of the traditional farmer's background who have lost their ability to farm, mainly because of desertification, which we've talked about before. Now, without even knowing anything about this country, the situation of these people should tell you some things about the central government and its relationship with these people in this region. Is it the job and responsibility of a government to provide employment for its citizens, or is it their job to murder them unarmed as they are just trying to survive? And it's not that this regime doesn't have money. They do have a lot of money, and they spend it on their military confrontations in the Middle East, and they are now sending weapons to Russia too. And they spend a lot on what they call their religious, cultural, and educational programs. And they lose a lot of money on their internal cronyism and corruption too. They can certainly create some sorts of employment for these people. And truth be told, I have actually seen some things about this. I mean, about employment programs in the domestic media. But obviously, whatever they were, they haven't worked. As for the reasons, I haven't researched it yet, but my guess would be, and this is only my guess, that either the plans weren't anything serious or practical, or if they were, in return, the regime must have asked for public statements of gratitude or allegiance from these people, which they would not want to give. Because the Baluchi people are Sunni Muslims, a religious minority, and they are a linguistic minority too, who the regime has always marginalized and discriminated against, and they would consider cooperation with this regime in this way some kind of selling themselves out.
It's just another one of those situations where it's like, as you're saying, as a result of desertification and climate change, that people who would be able to be farmers would be able to work one way of life that has been possible in that region for hundreds of years, right?
Yes.
But now are being forced to participate in this other aspect of the extractive resource industry.
Yes, exactly.
The oil industry, even though they are, you know, they're smuggling gasoline from one polity to another. They're still participating in this
exactly.
global
they're
oil
feeding
industry
of this extraction activity, but in
and
a
then making it even
way.
Work, and
yes.
then you know then themselves contributing to the global warming that
exactly.
is a result of the
exactly.
the
exactly.
petrochemical industry
exactly. And
yeah.
this is the point that I think I raised before, is that this particular country is putting way more than its fair share of pollution into the air. And we hear about fires. They were in Canada just a couple of months ago. I think they're controlled now. Or
no, still many, many
there
fires.
There's still many going on. Mm-hmm. And in Europe, it's the same story right now. You just have to listen to the news. In places like Portugal, you know, Greece, Italy, these places were immune before, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And North Africa, like Tunisia, Algeria, and there's people killed in these fires and so on. So this shows all the interconnectedness of things, is that like Iran is like right below Germany and Japan in the amount of greenhouse gases that it's emitting into the atmosphere, except that it's not doing anything useful to do this, you know. It's just polluting because their equipment is so outdated and they waste so much, and their oil industry is very, very outdated. and the cars are very outdated and so on and so forth. It's not only killing their own people, but it's also, you know, contributing this much greenhouse gases. So very good point. I mean, it's interesting that you put things in the global context even more than I had thought about it, because I'm thinking more of a local aspect of it, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting that you're putting it into this kind of a global context as well. And regarding desertification, which you mentioned, like I was just listening to news before coming here, and this is news about Africa, which you probably don't hear so readily unless the government changes over there, which is a big thing. But at this point, it's like the president, the news was that in Niger, it's a smaller country, much smaller than Nigeria. Nigeria is the big English-speaking country, and Niger is the smaller country to the east of this country, which is about 20-something million people. And like I always thought that it's a stable country, but right now what's happening is that there is an attempted coup going on. The president's house is being occupied or something like that, and I heard one of the reasons for the instability in this country is the same. Desertification has pushed farmers out of their lands, and there is a lot of economic uncertainty and everything. So global problems. And then again, well, it hasn't hit us so badly as we the people that live in big cities, you know, and we have all the services and jobs and money and bank accounts. But we should start thinking about it even out of self-interest, if not for, you know, social justice, you know. That's the whole point, you know. And so this is another matter of, in fact, urgent matter of human rights that deserves international awareness and should be in our list of projects for world media in English. Thank you, Jesse, for today.
Thank you, Ramtin. That was the third installment of our recurring World Media in English segment here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. That was Ramtin Bashi. You can find out more about World Media in English by going to their website, worldmediainenglish.org, where you can find out how to get involved and also read some of these articles in translation. You can also go to the World Media in English Facebook page. Okay, this is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse, and let's do a little bit more music. One of my favorite bands from college, still going strong. This is, excuse me, from their new record, Become. It's Beach House with Black Magic.
Thank you.
Magic by Beach House from the record Become here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, campus community radio from Simon Fraser University. I'm Jesse, and here with you this hour to share some talk and tunes as we do here on the radio. Up next, I want to tell you about a cool concert that CJSF is contest that CJSF is running in partnership with the Vancouver Queer Film Festival. CJSF is giving away 20 tickets to the screening of I Love You More on Saturday, August 12th, my brain, goodness, at the Cineplex Odeon International Village Cinemas, which is at 88 West Pender. Super simple contest to enter. Just go to the one of the posts on our Instagram or Facebook or other social media. Just comment and tag a friend, or you can email cjsfpr at sfu.ca with your name and the name of your plus one by August 9th. That is a week away, a little bit over a week away. I can tell you a little bit about the film itself, which is also really exciting and interesting, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. It is called, once again, I Love You More, directed by Erblin Nushi, who is Albanian. The movie is set in Albania and is mostly in Albanian, with well, the trailer has a little bit of English in it, but I'm not sure if that's just... well, the movie is Albanian and English with English subtitles. There we go. You can just read the information and figure it out. The movie is about reserved teenager Ben, who has two dreams: to escape the picturesque yet stifling Kosovar town in which he was raised, and to finally be united with Leo, his long-term boyfriend, who he has been dating online for a year but has yet to meet in person. With Leo set to visit in a month, Ben's romantic dreams are within reach, with enough time left for him to concoct the perfect cover story for his family. But when Ben learns of an exciting and immediate opportunity to travel overseas before Leo's arrival, his dreams are placed in dramatic opposition, leaving him to make an almost impossible decision. Effectively juxtaposing the bucolic beauty of its rural setting with Ben's turbulent interior emotions, Erblin Nushi's beautifully controlled feature is a strikingly shot and emotionally layered piece of work. With so few queer films produced in Kosovo, it is truly inspiring to see one as accomplished as this. So the screening will also be followed by a Q&A with the artists. Once again, the screening is Saturday, August 12th. We're giving away 20 tickets, so lots of chances to win. You can email cjsfpr at sfu.ca with your name and the name of your plus one, and I'll probably say that you're